You are listening to www.infinitesmile.org. Enjoy these Zen-inspired talks given by Michael McAllister, followed up by question and answer exchanges with groups of his students.
In the Platform Sutra, it says, at this moment, there is nothing which comes to be. In this moment, there is nothing which ceases to be. Thus, there is no birth and death to be brought to an end. Thus, absolute peace in this present moment, though it is at this moment, there is no boundary or limit to this moment, and herein is eternal delight. We can look really carefully at this quote all we want. We can even think about it. We can churn it around in our heads. We can listen again and again and again. But it will never be enough. Okay? It'll never be enough. It is pointing us on the direction of... It's pointing us up the path. It's pointing us up the path. The most important thing we can do is pay very, very close attention not only to the path, but specifically to the direction. Where exactly is it pointing to? At this moment, there is nothing which comes to be. In this moment, there is nothing which ceases to be. Thus, there is no birth and death to be brought to an end. Thus, absolute peace in this present moment, though it is at this moment, there is no boundary or limit to this moment, and herein is eternal delight. One way of looking at this is that this present moment, this very now, is all there ever is. And our freedom will only ever come from that vast spaciousness. For us to think that salvation will come in the future, or that I'll be happy in the future, things will be better off later, I'm just going through a tough time now, things are going to be better. For us to like get mired in that actually generates stress. We are here and we are now, yet if our mind patterning carries us into the future, meaning I wish I was not here and now, but somewhere else, that gap actually tears at the fabric of our presence. It tears us out of what we truly are. And that ripping hurts. Call it stress. We can do the same thing in the past. Okay? If we long for something we had before, something other than what is, but something that we had before, if there is a tremendous amount of mental or mind activity that is centered around that area, that contracted area of our life, something that was but is not now, what we're doing is actually centering our consciousness and confining our being to what we will never be able to have again. You will never have any aspect of the past again. You will only ever have what is happening in this moment. Though it is at this moment, there is no boundary or limit to this moment, and herein is eternal delight. Can we have the courage, the strength, to just open up to what is and not resist it, not flinch? Can we take whatever life is giving us in any given moment and be open to what is being offered? It doesn't mean we have to like it. It doesn't mean we have to dislike it. But can we be open to its existence? Because if we can, we are walking into a realm so vast, so miraculously charged with resolute clarity and infinite wonder that we become the embodiment of infinity. We become a bodhisattva. We become a being that is helpful without ever becoming. It's not something we become, because there is no birth and no death. We uncoil into it. We spend our lives tightening our grip, okay? And from this little passage from the Platform Sutra, it's not about the bondage, it's not about the gripping, it's not about the contraction in, it's about the uncoiling into, through, and from all at once. We become an infinite being that is no longer bound by circumstance, but actually unfolds into an ultimate life. Conventional circumstance becomes something that is experienced, but does not govern the way an ultimate life unfolds. Herein is eternal delight. So our typical situation is that life is really hard. Even though we get this, we purchase this, we have this relationship that's going really well, whatever situation arises, whatever circumstance is offered to us and that we work with in life, will always only be temporary. And so we're busily trying to make sure that it's permanent. We are usually just mired in a pathway that takes us right into feeling good all the time. I want to feel good. I don't want to be in pain. I don't want to be in physical pain. I don't want to be in emotional pain. I don't want the world to be in pain. I don't want others to be in pain. Okay, they're all laudable, all normal. But pleasure and pain really isn't the point of any type of authentic spiritual practice. Pleasure is not the point. Pain is not the point. The point of any authentic spiritual practice, be it Christian, Hindu, Muslim, Judaic, no matter what it is, Buddhist, can't forget Buddhist, right? No matter what, it's not about pleasure or pain if it is authentic. If it is authentic, it is about actually witnessing all that is pleasurable and all that is painful with an equal amount of our awareness, that we don't flinch, that we don't move away from whatever is arising, that our work is to become more conscious and to help others become more conscious through our activity. Herein is eternal delight that may not always feel good, paradoxically. This is the middle way. The middle way is dancing the tango on the edge of a razor, and your partner is always every single thing that arises. Do you have that grace? Do you have that ease? What brings it? What's the solution? How do we get into that? We develop a different brand of understanding where there is nothing under to stand on. That's gone. It's no longer understanding. It is what I have typically called knowing with a capital K. We unfold through our stillness into a knowing with a capital K. It's wisdom. The wisdom that it's all one thing. The wisdom that I am not actually in here and you are out there, or that chair or that bamboo plant or this, stone over here or this flower, whatever. It's not separate. It all arises within our witnessing awareness, right? Everything arises within our witnessing awareness. If everything arises within our witnessing awareness, nothing is outside of that. If nothing is outside of our witnessing awareness, including all of nature, including our thoughts, including our feelings, if nothing is outside of the scope of the witness, then every single thing that arises actually arises within the thing we call self. And if that's where we are, in a deep spaciousness where everything that arises arises within us, then we are the infinity. We are the ultimate life. In fact, it's the only thing we have never, ever been separate from. We've never been separate from it. Mind gets in the way of it. Our identification of things that the mind creates gets in the way of that being consciously realized, but it's always been there. So what is it actually that we understand from that space, from that deep spaciousness? We recognize that everything is temporary. Everything is temporary. Nothing lasts forever. No thing lasts forever. That becomes readily apparent. We also recognize that everything is interdependent on everything else. Nothing exists in isolation. All things exist because of everything else. Good exists because evil is there. Evil exists because it has good to butt up against. It's a thing, right? It's totally dependent on every other thing. All concepts that you have depend on your ability to give them fuel. That guy's a jerk that just cut me off. He can't be a jerk unless you're there. Of course, somebody else might think he's a jerk. But then his jerkiness is rooted in their labeling. There are no problems. There are only situations. There are only circumstances. Problems come from our identification or evaluation. Okay? Something is this or it is that. But from an open stance, from a non-judgmental stance, we recognize that we can use a discriminating awareness of what is arising as opposed to a this or that mentality, a dualism, black, white, right, wrong, yes, no. We start to develop a sense that there is something beyond right and wrong. There's something that is actually beyond right and wrong that resonates in the hearts and minds and beyond of every single conscious being on the planet. What does that feel like? What does that look like? Well, we recognize if we study it long enough, what it looks like and what it feels like is absolute and total emptiness. There's nothing there. And this is so totally threatening to everything in us that wants to be in control and wants to manage. Now, you could stop there. It's very dangerous, but you could stop there. You could have this, you know, blast off and recognize, oh my God, there's this, you know, the mountain that we're talking about is beyond good and bad and so forth. There is no right and wrong, therefore I can do whatever I want. Well, that actually has nothing to do with the next step, which is compassion. Compassion actually arises from this wisdom when the contracted sense of self is no longer filtering the experience. Compassion arises effortlessly out of wisdom. It's action that recognizes the singularity, the deep singularity of all things, of all situations, of all circumstances. And what springs from this is an ultimate life. How do we embody this action? We witness everything that arises. We surrender constantly. We forgive totally. We don't defend. We open. We do not defend, we open. And if our activity is informed by that, we don't harm. And we let that be our guide. We let that be the guide to our action, the not harming. So if we have this knowing with a capital K, and we have this action with a capital A, we have these two things that begin to govern our lives as we incorporate deeper and deeper stillness. We shine. And everybody else reflects that shine equally. We become a divine clear light. And our activity accentuates the already, always existing clear light in every other being at every other moment in time. In every other moment, everybody else can reflect it as well. And there is no boundary or limit to this moment. Herein is eternal delight.
I perhaps missed something. What is the source of this action?
If the source of the, you mean the action with the capital K, the capital A rather? I'm misspelling it. Caction, yes, right. What is the source of big action? Singularity, the deep singularity, a recognized, realized singularity with all things. A union, an at-one-ment, atonement, forgiving. You know, there are all sorts of words that could point in the direction. But it's this opening as opposed to this scrunched-up contraction. It's undefended. Action that comes from being undefended is action that is a blessing.
It's related to compassion, that also.
It is compassion, yeah.
It seems to me there's a semantic tightrope here. I mean, herein lies the source of eternal delight.
Mm-hmm.
This practice seems at times to run the risk of a certain smugness, because we've ended, I've ended. Suffering has ended.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like one can just be smug about that. I don't know.
Be smug in that, it sounds like, I want to make sure I really understand the commentary here, that
just
we...
Just walk through life and say, oh, that poor soul, that soul is attached.
That poor soul is attached. Yes, oh,
and
that poor
I'm
soul.
And avoiding it by not being attached.
And I am not attached, therefore, yeah. Pat myself on the back, right? That's not the practice, though, because what you've just done, if that's the commentary you make, that poor soul. Eternal delight is just
like
what?
Pleasure.
Oh, really?
Or not?
I mean, that's your story.
Well, I
eternal delight could be seen as
the
end of suffering. You know, we could look at the end of suffering, perhaps, as not only being, as the Buddha defined it, enlightenment, but also eternal delight, right? The end of suffering.
You just bliss out.
Right, just bliss out. Well, if you just bliss out and you stay there, you're attaching to the bliss. And if you attach to the bliss, what you've just done is you've co-opted the entire experience with an egoic contraction. If you've co-opted the whole experience with an egoic contraction, you have tried to take the vast infinitude and squished it into what you think and you conceive of and your opinion happens to be of in relationship to enlightenment. That's problematic. Now, I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm just saying that this is where ego begins to wear the robe.
Let's say I have a very tenacious ego.
Right.
And rather than just bliss out on bliss, I can bliss out on each individual moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like unattachment. No judgment, no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
No attachment, no repulsion, no grabbing.
Right.
I mean, that can be done.
Sure. And you're saying when ego starts to do that, I'm not attaching, I'm fine.
Let's
every
say, let's say I don't even see ego there. I can't smell it. I don't see the smoke.
Right. Stealth ego.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, eternal delight. I can go to a sutra and say, hey, look, I'm here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if you don't let go of the sutra and you don't let go of the letting go, you're right back where you started. Practice. Now, I'm not trying to be smug in that response. But the practice is silently being aware of all the back tapping you're giving yourself. Because any type of praise or recognition for doing it right, while it may actually help you along the path, doesn't help you really recognize that the path itself is delusion. Until you actually step through the path and realize that it's not even there, okay? Then what you're still doing is you're still traveling in a vehicle. And it's not until the traveler and the vehicle and the ocean or the mountain or whatever you're moving along in, from, to, through, dissolve and become one, okay? You will be reenacting stuff from a separate self sense, most likely. Which is the definition of karma. We are caught, once again, in activity that is bound from a selfish or manipulative place. So it's from the expanse that our action, capital A, or our compassion, we could say, that our compassion can only ever be realized, and it is only ever realized when the self disappears into the other, and the other disappears into the self, both equally.
I was looking for something that gives the edge. You mentioned the razor's edge.
Mm-hmm.
Action or seems to be the source for compassion or that one.
At one, yeah. Help me. Maybe I'm not understanding.
The edge.
You're looking for the edge.
I'm looking for this is the edge in a different. Collapsing the distinction there.
Sure.
Looking for the edge that would keep one. From smugness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there are certain times when you say, oh, the poor soul.
Right.
It's pity, it's not compassion.
That's right. If it's pity, there's ego.
I'm looking for
right.
the thing that's internal within the practice that can pop up and get me, or one, off that, that path, that view of looking.
Yeah, you're gonna hate the response here most likely because of its simplicity. Can you witness the pity? Can you witness the pride? Can you witness the feeling of I'm getting it? Can you witness the enthusiasm? Can you witness the deep interest? Because all I'm when I what everything that it everything that follows this can you witness blank whatever fills in that blank is an attachment. And if it's, let's just say, something like a light attachment, like a preference, it's pointing you right into the direction of the attachment. If it's pity, oh, that poor soul, there's still ego. Because there's an I sense there. Can you witness that I sense? Who are you? Who are you? And if you let that guide the dance, you can't help, you will never fall off the razor. And as a matter of fact, the dance on that razor spins more beautifully from that place. It becomes a continual miracle. that weakens people's knees that watch it. And you don't care, because there's no you to care. It just is. And we happen to call it Paul. Or something like that.
Perhaps.
Perhaps, right.
Mm-hmm. Is part of the edge no different for me? There can't be smugness. I mean, how could I, if I see a schlep over there, and I really am, that there's no difference, that he's me, then I can't be thinking how great my practice is if I really see him as me.
Right, because you see still from the view of I'm in here,
yeah,
and they are out there.
But
right.
If you're not, I mean, to me, that's my personal edge anyway. It's like the little gains that this one makes, well, that's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Only 6.5 billion more to go, plus the rest of the planet, plus everything else.
Exactly. And so it's like, and this may be helpful, a helpful practice. One of the things that every one of us can do is, as we walk down the street, if we ever notice that there's a resistance, if we ever notice that there is something that implies I'm in here and everything else is out there, you're coming from a defended place, what can break down that barrier is the simple phrase, three words, just like me. Just like me. Break it down even further. There I am. You know? Another one that was taught to me that I really use constantly is whenever there is any bit of either the pride or smugness that you're talking about, and I think that this is a serious issue for teachers. I really do. I think that teachers really can start believing their own press releases and stuff like that, and I think that gets very, very dangerous. Can they always see themselves through every other thing? Can they recognize there is no separation, that there only is that which arises, and everything that arises within the awareness, and the awareness is your original face to begin with? All things are ultimately you. All things arise to create this thing we call the self, but the self itself is totally a fabrication that is interdependent, that is temporary, and that at its core is infinite. Wow. Just like me. And herein is eternal delight. I will see you October 6th. Is that it?
No. How about April?
Did I say October? I'm taking a long break. Yeah. April 6th. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for joining us. For more information about either the Infinite Smile Sangha or Michael McAllister, check out our website at www.infinitesmile.org.